gods so that they wouldn't offend anybody. They didn't want to leave anybody out. And they had this polytheistic idea that there were multiple gods, all sorts of gods, okay? And so he reasoned. He was upset that there were so many idols around. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and with those who worship God, or the God-fearing Jews or Greeks, as some of the translations call it, those who worship God, and in the marketplace every day with those who happen to be there. Now, the way the city was laid out in those days, they had kind of a town square, if you want to call it that, a center of the city, and that was the marketplace. And people would bring their goods there each day, and you'd browse through the thing. And you see, in those days, they didn't have refrigerators. You know, we think we got it bad out here at Meadview. We got refrigerators. We got freezers, okay? We could at least bring stuff home and stick it in there and store it. They didn't have that. No refrigerators, no freezers. So every day was a harvest. Every day they were out harvesting. Every day they were going out and getting their supplies that they needed for that day. They couldn't store up stuff, not for long periods of time. They, of course, had some dry goods and stuff in the sense of grains and stuff, but they weren't able to store things long term. So constantly they were going into the marketplace. And this became a social center where you would connect with people and stuff. Well, one of the things that they would do is they'd stand around and they'd have these discussions, okay? So Paul joined in some of these discussions, and he began presenting the gospel right at that point. And every day, to those who happened to be there in that marketplace. Then also, some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers argued with him. And some said, what is this pseudo-intellectual trying to say? Now, I chose this translation today because of that word, okay? Pseudo-intellectuals. I like the way it says it. Some of your translations said, what's this babbler saying? You know, that was kind of a... There are some other impolite words that were used, okay? So in some translations. But the idea being, they were talking about this pseudo-intellectual. They were looking at Paul, they'd listen to his words, and they'd sense, oh, well, he's just putting on this air of being somebody who's educated. Don't forget, Athens was the center of culture, okay? The great minds were there. They considered themselves to be the learned ones, the ones with knowledge. Okay, they considered themselves to be above the rest of the rabble, and there's even stories about how that impacted, and part of the reason why Rome was able to conquer them and other things. But the point being is that they lifted themselves up, kind of stuck their nose up, and said, "Oh, they were listening to Paul." Some of the translations say the dilettante, okay, which means a person who knows a little bit about a lot of things, but not very much about anything. Okay, And they were going around and referring to Paul in this fashion. They could tell he was learned. And don't forget, Saul was one of the most learned Jews at the time. He had sat at the feet of Gamaliel, which was a great teacher. He was raised in Tarsus, which was a center where the Stoics had developed. And he mentions the Epicureans and the Stoics. If you don't know, those are philosophies that dominated at that time. Okay, they had started around that 300 BC area, 200 BC, and they had been developing throughout the area. The Epicureans are interesting. They came up with this concept of the atom, that all matter consisted of these atoms, okay? And that's where they came up with the concept, and we've stolen it, and we've kind of assigned it names today, and we actually have an object that that's assigned that. But they talked about the atoms, and that we were all made of these atoms. And that was all that was real. That was all that was really there, okay? And that whenever a person ceased to be, whenever they died, their bodies would return to this matter, state of matter, and ultimately break down into these atoms, okay? Just to be, go away. There was no eternity. There wasn't a continuation. There wasn't anything in you that lasted beyond the life that you lived in this earth, okay? There was no soul, no spirit, nothing that kept going. Their ultimate goal was pleasure, basically. Now, before you get off on that and think, well, all they were was about going out and having parties, that's not quite it. Pleasure for them was the absence of pain, okay? So, in essence, their idea was that they wanted to experience an absence of pain. They wanted to have pleasure. And the way they would do that is they'd look long-term. Okay, it wasn't about immediate pleasure. So they weren't justifying going out and being gluttons or partiers or anything like that. That wasn't their focus, okay? They didn't look at that. They looked at the long-term ramifications. If I act this way now, how's that going to affect my future? Is it going to generate pain down the road? Is it going to have a repercussion where it's going to cause more pain than it does pleasure? And they were always looking at that. And so their idea was, even though all they saw was the temporal, all they saw was that life was short and you had this life and that was it, that didn't give them a license to go out and party. They had a control because they were looking at how they could experience pleasure in the long term. Not just that, part of it was also not causing pain for others, okay? So that was part of what their philosophy embraced and how they continued to live. Stoics, on the other hand, although it ultimately kind of boiled down to the same thing, a seeking after pleasure, in a sense, they went about it in a different way. Instead of, and by the way, the Epicureans were polytheists, meaning that they believed in multiple gods. And they accepted all the gods out there, but you see, because they didn't have there wasn't an afterlife for them. There wasn't anything beyond this life. The gods were just another being. They were just kind of a further developed human in some ways. They weren't anything, there wasn't an interaction. There was no accountability to them. There wasn't anything that caused you to submit to them. The Stoics, on the other hand, had the idea of energy. Okay, it wasn't the atom that was important. It was the energy that all of us, and you guys know the force of Star Wars? And this is a little bit a shade towards that, okay? That everything had this energy within it. And the idea of life was that we would experience this energy, that we would be at harmony with this energy. And it was about bringing harmony and peace, okay? And this is why, for them, there was no emotion. The thing that upset this harmony, the energy, and not maintaining the energy, was a disruption in the emotional state. So they would seek out those things to support a calm and peaceful style. In essence, again, looking at pleasure. And that was what they were looking for. Whereas the Epicureans were polytheists, the Stoics were pantheists, meaning they saw God in everything. They did believe in a God. Gods, because they were all part of that energy. And they believed in this pantheism that God was in everything. And they were one with God. And they were God, because they were one with God. And they had the energy. And so it gets really confusing whenever you get into that. And so these philosophies were there. Paul, as he preaches down here in a few short verses, there will be subtleties that will address these issues. You have to understand that some of these, he's going to be talking to these philosophies of life. And he's going to be pointing out how neither one of them hit the mark. But the true God has revealed something other, okay? So this is where we are with this. And others replied about Paul. You know, they talked about him being a pseudo-intellectual. And they asked, what is he trying to say? Others replied, he seems to be a preacher of a foreign deities. Notice the word deities, okay? They're thinking, again, polytheism, they're thinking there's more of God, and they're thinking Paul is preaching more than one God. Because he was telling them the good news about Jesus, okay, that was the first God, and the resurrection. They were assigning a God quality to this concept of the resurrection. And again, understand that's because neither one of these believed in any life after, anything not like this. They didn't believe in what we talk about as an afterlife. They didn't talk about heaven. They didn't see us existing beyond this life. Neither one of them did. So we talked about this resurrection. And it says they took him and brought him to the Areopagus. Okay, what the Areopagus was, and you're going to look down in verse 22 if you do that, you'll see it, there's also a reference to Mars Hill. Well, it's referring to the same thing. The Areopagus was kind of the part of the city center where the courts were, okay, the judgment place. And where it was is here they would bring him. They brought him from the marketplace, which probably wasn't far away, but they brought him up to the hill, which was called Mars Hill. Okay, it was referred to Mars Hills because it was named after the god Ares in Greek, which was the god Mars in for the Roman god. Okay, and so it became known as Mars Hill, and it was a place where it was elevated a little bit, and they had a few places there where they would meet. Part of that was a court setting, if you'd have it that way, or a meeting hall. Probably not huge, probably, you know, maybe 100 folks could fit there, if that much. I don't know. I've never been there. Don't know. I'm just going by other descriptions. But it was a meeting place, maybe something like this, where they could come together and they'd have quiet. And they went away from the distractions of the marketplace. They said, we want to hear. He's saying something that we don't understand. We want to hear what he's trying to tell us. So they brought him to this separate area. Some people think that Paul was kind of almost arrested and brought before a tribunal, if you'd have it that way. Doesn't really seem that. It seems more like there was discussion, because at the end, Paul was free to live. Nevertheless, he was brought before this group of people. They wanted to hear what he said, and they were going to pass judgment. I understand. I'm not sure. But was it not Socrates that had to drink that poison? Who was it? Socrates, I think it was, because he was preaching a false god. And the Athenians back 300 years earlier had made him drink a poison that caused him to die. It was here in this judgment place that took place, if it was indeed Socrates. Whoever it was, maybe it was Hippocrates. Was it Hippocrates? I don't know. I know it was one of those guys. The names get mixed up to me, okay? But it was one of those guys, and they were judged in this location and sentenced and sentenced to death because of what they were teaching. So it's not that this is to be just bypassed, that he just had another meeting. He was preaching again. This is a little more significant. He was presenting the truth, and they were going to be judging him in that sense. It says that so they wanted to bring him to this Areopagus, and they said, may we learn about this new teaching you're speaking of, for what you say sounds strange to us, and we want to know what these ideas mean. Now all the Athenians, and this is Luke's commentary on why this was happening. He says, now all the Athenians and the foreigners residing there spent their time on nothing else but telling or hearing something new. So he's trying to explain and put in context that they were scratching. They wanted knowledge, but they weren't necessarily committed to anything, okay? They wanted knowledge, and they were constantly pursuing this. Knowledge in Greek is called gnosis, okay? The word is gnosis in Greek. And he talks here about ignorance. The word for ignorance is that word gnosis, okay, but with a negative prefix, a negative prefix ah. So ah gnosis, or where we get our word agnostics, meaning a lack of understanding, meaning without knowledge, all right? It's important that you understand that as we go forward, as we consider what he says through this, okay? It says in verse 22, then Paul stood up in the middle of the Areopagus, and he said, men of Athens, I see that you are extremely religious in every respect, for I was passing through and observing the objects of your worship. I even found an altar on which was inscribed to an unknown God. Now, understand, here's one of the things you need to see that Paul was doing. Paul first acknowledged their religious nature. Now, we talked about the Epicureans, we talked about the Stoics, and neither one of them were particularly religious, okay? They they didn't see a life after this, okay, after this life. But yet, they still had plenty of gods to worship. And Paul was trying to make a connection here. And he came and he started speaking to them at the place where they were in their understanding of who God is. Guys, you need to see that this is how God addresses us. He comes to us and he says, this is where you are in your life. I know where you are. I understand where you are. I know the issues you're struggling with. I know what you're facing. I know what's in your heart. And he says, it's right here that I want to meet you. I want to come and be right where you are. God doesn't sit back on his throne and say, you've got to change and come to me. And this is one of the things that Paul is pointing out. There's a difference between the gods that you worship and the true God that I'm going to tell you about. You worship these gods that demand performance out of you. They say, when you get good enough, then we'll deal with you. Or we'll just ignore you completely. You know, who knows? That's kind of the attitude of the Greek and Roman gods, okay? But there were gods. And if you go out and you study world religions, you realize most of the world religions are about this concept. They're about God, man reaching up, trying to grab at God, trying to become better, trying to change themselves so that they can reach up to God, and they're reaching out for him, and they can never make it. We can never attain to what God requires of us. And in Christianity is that one religion where instead you see that God is reaching down to man. It's his hand that reached down and found us. It's his hand. He is the one that sent Christ to die on the cross. He is the one that paid the penalty of our sin, because that's who he is. Paul is even now setting them up to understand that concept, and he wants you to get that as well. And he talks about this unknown God. And he says, therefore, what you worship in ignorance, there's that word agnosis, okay? There's that word that says what you're interesting without knowledge, without understanding. It's real important to understand as well. The Stoics, their pursuit was knowledge. The Stoics were about knowledge. That was part of this energy that they maintained and part of where their peace came from, understanding, gaining knowledge. This is part of what drove them to ask Paul to come and speak to them. But here, Paul says, you've been worshiping these gods without knowledge, in ignorance, without the knowledge that you claim that you're wanting. And he says, I proclaim to you this God. I want you to know who this God is. He says, the God who made the world and everything in it. Now, Paul is going back beyond what they understand, because he's talking now about a creator God. He's talking about natural revelation. You find this in Romans chapter 1, where Paul talks about the fact that God was made known. We find this in Psalm 19, and other places in the scripture, that God, that the whole earth speaks of God's glory. It reveals who he is. The stars in the sky, the trees that are growing, life itself reveals who God is, and he is able to be known. God's very existence, God's presence is able to be known, and we have to deny the presence of God. There are so many people, and I don't want to get off in the science of this. We've talked about it in the past. I'm not trying to do that, but I want you to understand that he is trying to point out that God was there in the very beginning. And that it's God who was the source of creation and all that we know, all that we understand in this physical world. And I've said it before, and I'm saying it again to you. The four hardest words in the English Bible to get over are the first four words. In the beginning, God. If you cannot accept that God was all that there was in the beginning, that God was the source of all creation, you're going to have problems believing the rest of the Bible. You are, because of this very thing. But he says, if you can accept that it was God that existed in the beginning, God and God alone, and that all that we know in this physical world was the result of his creative power, because he spoke it into existence. He spoke it. Everything that has life. And if you can understand that God breathed life into Adam, God breathed life into Eve, that provides the answer to so many other things. Paul's going to talk about the resurrection in a minute, and they're going to scoff. And they're going to scoff because they don't believe in this concept of a God of creation. We have to deal with that. There is a creator God. And that's where Paul is. He's trying to help them see that very thing. He says, the God who made the world and everything in it, he is Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in shrines made by hands. So he's addressing now, and he's pointing out all of the idols that they have erected. He's pointing to all the temples that they have built, some of the greatest temples in the old ancient world are there in Athens, okay? And they were there where they'd go and they would worship at these temples. And he's pointing at them and he says, God is not there. He doesn't live in those temples. He doesn't live in the idols. That's not what he is. And he's going to go on and he's going to explain more of that. He says, neither is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives everyone what? Life and breath. He is the one who breathed life into mankind. He's emphasizing, he's setting them up, he's setting the stage, because he's going to talk about something that they can't accept. So he's telling them ahead of time, God is the source of life and breath and all things. And from one man, he has made every nationality to live over the whole earth and has determined their appointed times and the boundaries of where they live. And Paul is addressing possibly some bigotries that they had, pointing out the fact that everybody came from one couple, okay? God created that, and we all have a shared and common ancestry. Doesn't matter the color of the skins, doesn't matter the culture, doesn't matter the boundary, the state that they live in, and it doesn't matter that you're Athenians and you're looking down your nose at everybody else in the world, okay, is what he's saying. Very politely he's saying it, but he's saying that, okay? And he says, he did this so that they might seek who? God. Paul wants them to know. They did this so that they might seek God. God wanted them seeking him and perhaps might reach out and find him. Some of the translations talk about groping right there, that they might grope out and find him. He's not talking about here a senseless search. Okay, he's not talking about blindly, but what he's talking about is that intensity of the search, that you know it's there, you know it's right there, and you're stretching, you're reaching, trying to find who this God is. And he's saying God wants us to seek after him, to seek to understand him, to seek to connect with him, to know him. And this is what he's talking about. He's appealing to them. He says, you guys are so fascinated with knowledge. You're so much in this pursuit of knowledge, but yet you're not groping. You're not seeking after this God. And he's trying to say, this is why God created the world, so that you could seek him, so that you could know him. In verse 28, for in him we live and move and exist, and as even some of our own, your own poets have said, for we are also of him. Also his offspring. And Paul talks back. He's not endorsing their philosophy necessarily, but one of the things he's showing, he is educated. He's trying to show to them, and he's reaching them on their level again, where they are, and he's taking what they understand, what they know, and he's presenting, using it to present who Jesus Christ is. He wants them to understand that. And he says, for we also are his offspring. Being God's offspring, then we shouldn't think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone. Now, think about it. He's saying simply this. If God is the one who created us, and we are an image of him, and we're like him, we were like him, why do you create these idols out of stone and gold and silver? Why do you create idols that are lifeless and call them God? God, that's not who God is. If we're not like that, what makes you think he is? Why would you do that, is what he's saying. he calls them simply an image fashioned by human art and imagination. Verse 30, therefore, having overlooked the times of ignorance, God, he's saying, God overlooked your what? Your lack of knowledge. He's using that phrase again, and he's pulling on their pursuit of knowledge, their desire to know. And he's saying, God has overlooked the fact that you don't know this, all right? He says, God now commands all people everywhere to repent. And listen to why. Because he has set a day when he's going to judge the world in righteousness by the man he has appointed. And he has approved and he has provided proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. And with that went out a great outcry. Boy, what are you talking about raising from the dead? Don't forget, neither one of them. The Epicureans said, no, there is no life after death. The Gnostics said, no, there isn't anything that exists following that time of death except the energy that just goes on. What are you talking about raising somebody up from the dead? And see, this is why Paul talked about creation. He talked about the life and breath being poured into mankind so that they would understand who God was and that God was in charge of very life. And if he created a man once, certainly he has the power to give life again. And he has power to sustain that life. And he's saying, your concept of God is too small. You don't know who God is. You need to understand who he is. And he's going to hold you accountable now for the knowledge that you have. Two kinds of knowledge, folks. I found this out when I took German. I mentioned this before. Two kinds of knowledge. In German, they have two separate words. One of those words, and I get them mixed up, but I'm pretty sure it's kennen. The word kennen in German means to know a fact. To know he's holding a book. To know a fact. The world is round. It's a fact. The Stoics, the Epicureans, were obsessed with the facts, just the knowledge, the gnosis. But in German, there's another word, wissen. Wissen is the other word. And it means basically to know the person. It's one thing to know about somebody. Probably many of you could tell me facts about President Obama or President Trump or President Bush. And you would use that word, kennen. I know these facts about them. But how many of you can say, I know, I wissen, I know the person of the president or the former president? See, there's the difference. We know lots of facts. And he's saying, you guys are pursuing the knowledge about God. You're pursuing these facts. That's what your worship is? He's saying, no. God is a person. He wants to know you personally. And he wants to reveal himself to you. He wants you to seek after him. He wants that relationship with you. And he's going to hold you accountable. Because there's coming a day when we're going to stand before him and he's going to judge us. And he's going to judge us through his Son, Jesus Christ. And he's proved that to you because he raised him from the dead. And of course, because they couldn't understand this resurrection of the dead, they balked. And it goes on, it says, when they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some began to ridicule him. But others said, we'd like to hear from you again about this. And then Paul left their presence. It seems he walked out peacefully. It says, however, some men joined him and believed, including Dionysius the Areopagite. He was apparently one of the judges that was there. And a woman named Damaris and others with them. So the question is, we find that after Paul presented this dynamic sermon, 22 verses, or 10 verses, that was great. Nice short sermon, right? Yeah, even though he did it in 10 verses, you ain't ever going to get that out of me, guys, okay? I don't know how to condense it down that far. But in 10 verses, short address, he presented that gospel message to him. Very pointed. And he said, you've got to decide. What are you going to do with Jesus? Folks, that's the same decision you need to make. And it's a decision we make every day. Every day. You may have made it back when you were 13 years old. But you know what? God calls us into a relationship with him. That's part of knowing him as a person. Every day we decide, am I going to go forward with Christ today? Am I going to know him better? Am I going to know him more intimately? Do I want to pursue him today? God calls us to that kind of a relationship. It's not a one-time event. Oh, yeah, I did that way back. Yeah, I saw the Grand Canyon. I don't need to see it again. No. It changes your life and everything. When you meet God, everything is different. And we need to be willing to let him change our lives. Are you willing today? Are you willing? Let's stand together. If God has spoken to you, as far as I know, everybody here has received Christ in their lives, knows him. But I'm not going to assume that God isn't speaking to you about some aspect. And if you need to respond to God, there are altars here. You can come and kneel here and let God speak with you personally. If you need someone to pray with you, I'm here. We have deacons in this church that would be willing to pray with you as well. What is God speaking to you? Do you need to respond today?